Welcome to Through the Bible with Les Felder, a 30-minute walk through the Scriptures, teaching in-depth Bible truths that change people's lives. Now, here's your host, Les Felder.
Okay, good to get back together, and we're ready for our fourth one this afternoon, and we're going to be looking at Isaiah chapter 1. What do you got up here, Jerry? Verse 25. But again, we always like to remind our listening audience that we're just an informal Bible study, and our whole scope of teaching is to help people study on their own and be able to compare Scripture with Scripture. Because a lot of times you can't just answer these things with just one verse. You have to take a composite of the whole. And that's our whole purpose for teaching, is not to make ourselves something that we're not, but just to be able to help the average believer become a good Bible student. Okay, let's go right back where we left off in our last program, which was still in Isaiah chapter 1. And let's see, let's look at verse 24. Jerry's got 25. Let's go back into verse 24 a minute. Therefore saith the Lord, because remember what he was just dealing with, all the bribery and all the conniving in order to just make more for the individual with no concern about the widows and the fatherless, the orphans. Therefore saith the Lord of hosts, the mighty one of Israel. See how all this is just strictly Jewish? We're not dealing with Gentiles here one bit. This is God dealing with his covenant people. He says, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies. Now verse 25, I will turn my hand upon thee, that is the nation of Israel, and I will purely purge away thy dross and take away all thy tin. Now these are material things. I will restore thy judges as at the first, way back before they had a king, and thy counselors as at the beginning. In other words, it's going to go full circle. And we're getting ready now for the kingdom that's going to be introduced in the book of Isaiah in chapter 2. Now, I don't know whether we'll get there in this half hour, but if we do, that's all it'll be, is just an introduction to it. But now he's showing, and I guess the point I want to make before we go any further, all the way through Israel's history, first would come the judgment, and then would come the blessings. Always remember that. Israel would always have to go through the judgment because of their rebellion, because of their wickedness. But God never gave up on them, as we showed in the last half hour. His mercy would not depart from them. And after the judgment, after the dealing with their rebelliousness, here would come the blessings of God. All right, now the same thing here, but it's looking forward to the long term. Now, remember when we first started the first program this afternoon, I told you everything in this book is going to have a near term, a midterm, and a long term. All right, now when we start talking about the kingdom, of course, that's a long term. That's not going to happen after the return from Babylon. It's not going to happen even after Christ's first advent and the destruction of 70 AD, but it will not happen until the judgment of the tribulation, which now today we can see the world is being prepared for. All right, so now then going on into verse 26, I will restore thy judges as at the first. In other words, when they were in the place of blessing, thy counselors as at the beginning. Afterward thou shalt be called the city of righteousness. See what a difference? Now instead of being a city of harlots, it's going to be the city of righteousness, the faithful city. Zion, now remember that's another term for Jerusalem. Mount Zion is in the city of Jerusalem. Zion shall be redeemed with judgment, that is, with, again, good government, good law and order, and her converts with righteousness, and the destruction of the transgressors and of the sinners shall be together. God's going to cleanse them of it. And they that forsake the Lord shall be consumed. He's going to remove them off the scene. Now I can take you up to the gospel account where the Lord said, that at that day there would be two grinding at the mill. One would be taken, the other left. Now, for years, I think a lot of people thought that was a reference to the rapture. No, it was not. It was a reference to Israel being cleansed of the unbeliever. And so it's the unbelieving Jew that would be removed, and the believer remains to go into the kingdom. All right, so here we have the same thing. The destruction of the transgressors and the sinners shall be together. They that forsake the Lord shall be consumed. They'll be removed from the scene. Now verse 29. For they shall be ashamed of the oaks which you have desired. Now remember, we're talking about two different classes of people now. Now we're talking about the believing element, the remnant. And they will be ashamed of the oaks. Now, use your imagination, if you can, a little bit. Where do you suppose the Jews prepared to put their idols, or preferred to put their idols when they'd worship? Under the oak tree. The oak tree was almost an idol in itself because of its beauty and its stamina. All right, and so that's the reference, that under every oak tree there had been an idol. But now for these believing, the remnant that will be coming into the kingdom, they're going to be ashamed of what their forefathers had done, see? And they will be ashamed of the yokes which you have desired, and you shall be confounded for the gardens that you have chosen, because they chose them for idolatry. All right, now verse 30. For you, now remember, he's addressing the unbeliever. He's addressing the rebellious. For you shall be as an oak whose leaf fadeth. What does that mean? What's happening to the tree? It's dying. It's dying. And a dead oak tree is worthless. All right? And you'll be as a garden that hath no water. Have you ever seen a garden in Oklahoma that hadn't been watered about the last week of August? It's pitiful. Pitiful. Well, that's the analogy, see? You will be just like an unwatered garden that hasn't had rain. Now verse 31. The strong, those who were the eminent members of the nation of Israel, shall be as tow. Now, years and years ago, I looked that word up, and it has reference to the flax that is used to weave linen. Now, you know, linen comes from flax straw. Tow was, if I remember correctly, was the flax straw out of which they made their beautiful linen. All right, and the strong shall be just like flax straw. And the maker of that linen, that is the weaver, will be like a spark. Well, what in the world will a spark do to flax straw? Poof! Goes up in a flame of fire. And they shall both, what? Burn together. And none shall quench them. Now, if it's a stretch, I think maybe we can include the dead oak tree of the previous verse. I'm not sure, but I think it all is analogous, that all of these things that are coming to nothing in the life of Israel will go up in a puff of smoke in the judgment of God. All right, but now, oh, we're going to break into the sunrise of a precious promise, and that is a coming glorious earthly kingdom for the nation of Israel. Isaiah chapter 2. Verse 1, the word that Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now remember, like we said at the beginning, he is a prophet ministering in the southern kingdom of Judah and Jerusalem, but it also applies to the northern 10 tribes up in what we refer to as Israel. Now verse 2, it shall come to pass. Now, I've said it over and over. What is that? That's a promise, and what's going to follow? The prophecy. The promise and the prophecy. Here's the promise. It's going to happen. What is? That in the last days, the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. Now, in order to establish that he's talking about this coming earthly kingdom, just jump ahead with me to Daniel. Daniel chapter 2. because everything now is going to be prophetically looking forward to this glorious earthly kingdom on the earth, heaven on earth. And, of course, Christ's first coming was a partial fulfillment of all that. But already in Daniel chapter 2, when he has seen the vision of Nebuchadnezzar and how all the Gentile empires are pictured in that image, the head of gold, the chest of silver, the belly of brass, the legs of iron, the feet and toes of iron mixed with clay, which are representative of 10 nations coming together in a loose democratic form of government, as we see Europe doing today. All right, then he comes to the end of all that. Verse 43. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, I'm in Daniel 2, 43, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. I think that's a perfect picture of the European community today. Now then, verse 44. In the days of these kings, or these 10 governments in Western Europe, and that's why I feel we're getting so close to the end time. In the days of these kings, or these governments, shall the God of heaven set up a, what? A kingdom, which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It's going to be Israel's kingdom under Israel's king. Now, I think I mentioned in one of my classes, either on the road or the other night in Oklahoma. Do you remember when the wise men came to King Herod? What were they asking for? Where is he that is to be born King of the Jews? They knew what they were looking for. But did Israel? And then you get all the way to the crucifixion. What did old Pilate have put on the top of the cross? This is Jesus of Nazareth, the what? The King of the Jews. Even old pagan Pilate had a better understanding than the rank and file of Israel. Even Pilate had a better understanding than most in Christendom today. I trust you know that most of Christendom does not recognize a coming earthly kingdom. They don't know what you're talking about. But here it is. It will be a glorious kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Back in verse 44 of Daniel 2. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. No invader is going to come in and overrun it. It shall break in pieces and consume all those previous kingdoms. It's going to be the only one left. And it shall stand forever. All right, now then, verse 45, he interprets the dream in light of that kingdom. Verse 45, for as much as thou sawest that the stone that crushed the image, remember, inasmuch as the stone that was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it broke in pieces, the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold. In other words, that whole image is bowled over, ground up by this coming stone, which is a reference again to Christ, who is always the stone of Scripture. All right. And the great God hath made known to the king what shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof is sure. All right, now then, while we're in Daniel, might as well go over to chapter 7. Just slip over to chapter 7, where instead of interpreting someone else's dream, Daniel has a vision of his own. And he, too, is going to depict these same great Gentile empires. And I won't read them verse by verse, but it's the same ones. Verse 4, the first Gentile empire would be Babylon, just like the head of gold. Then comes another one, and it's the Persian Empire, and it's likened unto a bear. And then there comes the next one, which is Greece, verse 6, and it's likened unto a leopard because of its swiftness and its speed. And then comes the fourth great empire, which was the Roman, in verse 7. And then, of course, he goes beyond the Roman and picks up the revived Roman Empire. All right, now then, come on over to verse 9. Now we're to verse 9, as Daniel continues on explaining his vision. And it's identical with Nebuchadnezzar's dream. Now verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down. All the Gentile empires have been obliterated. And the Ancient of Days did sit, the God of heaven, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like the pure wool, his throne like a fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. And then he goes on and gives a graphic description of the very throne room of heaven. And then you come on down to verse 13. He continues on in his visions, and I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man. Now that's a particular name of deity concerning Israel. And I saw one like the Son of Man. He came with the clouds of heaven. And he came to the Ancient of Days, God the Father. And they brought him, that is, the Son of Man, near before him. Now verse 14, and there was given him, God the Son, dominion and glory and a what? Kingdom. And in this kingdom you'll have all people, all the nations and the languages, and they will serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion. It's going to be for 1,000 years on the planet as we know it. It'll be interrupted for just a little bit, and it slips right on into an eternal new heaven, new earth. But it's the same kingdom over which Christ will rule and reign on the new earth. All right? And it'll be an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. All right, now let's go back and go a little further in Isaiah chapter 2, and then we're going to digress if we have time and pick up some of the other prophecies that depict judgment followed by this glorious coming kingdom. Back to Isaiah 2, verse 2 again, hon. This is a key verse in prophecy. And it shall come to pass in the last days, leading up to Christ's return. Now you got to remember, did Israel have any concept of a 2,000-year interval between the cross and the king? No. There was no concept of that whatsoever. They thought that there would have to be a suffering Messiah, but they didn't understand how, what, and what for. They didn't understand a crucifixion. They didn't understand that the Messiah would be crucified, buried, and raised from the dead. All they understood was that there would be a suffering Messiah. Isaiah 53 was full of it. How he would be like a lamb before his shearers is dumb, and how he would be suffering for the transgressions of the people. But they didn't know how, why, or when. But they also knew there was a coming glorious king. And that's what Peter speaks of, that the prophets searched diligently. Because they knew there had to be two concepts of Messiah. A suffering Messiah and a ruling Messiah. But they couldn't put it together. And God didn't expect them to. Because, see, Israel had no idea that because of their unbelief, the kingdom would be postponed, and that instead of coming in shortly after the resurrection and ascension and the tribulation, and Christ would return as all the Old Testament depicts it, there would be a 1900 and some year interval with Israel out in dispersion, brought back to the land before the king and the kingdom could come. And so this was all hidden from them so that they couldn't understand it. All right, but reading on in verse 2, that it will come to pass that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains. The mountains here depicting kingdoms. And it will be above all other kingdoms that have ever existed. And it will be exalted above even smaller kingdoms and empires. And then here's the promise. all nations, all the nations shall flow into it. Now remember, there's no concept here of the intervening church age. There is no concept except that Israel would be the evangelist bringing the Gentiles to a knowledge of their God. Jump all the way up to Zechariah. Zechariah, chapter 8. And I'm thinking of this verse because of what it said, that all the nations will flow into this kingdom, which will be capitalized in Jerusalem, where the throne of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords will rule the planet Earth. All right, in Zechariah chapter 8, drop in at verse 20. And this is plain language. This isn't gobbledygook. This isn't imagery. This isn't something you have to try and figure out what it's talking about. This isn't figure of speech. This is literal. All right, verse 20. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the same God that is speaking back in Isaiah, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people and the inhabitants of many cities. Now don't forget why I came here. All the nations shall flow into it, Isaiah said. All right? And these inhabitants of the cities will say, let us go speedily to pray before the Lord, that is before Jehovah, before the Son of Man, before Jesus of Nazareth, the Exalted One, and to seek the Lord of hosts. I will go also. Verse 22, yea, many people and strong nations, plural, shall come to seek the Lord of hosts. Where? In Jerusalem. Not in heaven. In Jerusalem. The same Jerusalem that's over there today. All right? And they will pray before the Lord. Now here comes a promise from God Himself. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, in those days when Israel has the king and the kingdom, it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all the languages of the nations, even shall take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew. And they will say to the Jew, we will go with you. Why? For we have heard that God is with you. Now, is that plain enough? It's coming. Now, of course, since they dropped the ball at His first advent and rejected this opportunity, they won't have the privilege of winning Gentiles to their Messiah during the kingdom. It will now have to be done before the kingdom begins, because there will be no plan of salvation in the kingdom. There will be no lost people per se. Satan is locked up, so there is no rebellion that's evident. And so this is something that has now, you might say, been abrogated by the fall of the nation. But I feel the 144,000 will pick up the ball in the tribulation period and still make restitution for what the nation as a whole has dropped. All right, in the couple minutes we have left, let's come all the way back to Psalms. We use these verses, especially for those of you here in my Oklahoma classes, we use this over and over to depict Psalms chapter 2, Psalms chapter 2, to depict the outline of this Old Testament program. And it's so clearly put. And yet, I'm afraid most of Christendom ignores it. It doesn't, again, need interpretation. I don't have to go and construct out of the Greek what it's saying. It's plain English. All right, verse 1. We got 3 minutes left, and I think I can do it. Verse 1 of Psalm chapter 2. Why do the heathen, the non-Jewish world, rage, and the people, Israel, in consort with them, imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth, now as it shook out, it was Rome, Pilate, set themselves, and the rulers, the high priests, took counsel together, not just Jews, but together with the Gentiles. And they rebelled against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords. In other words, they don't want God ruling in the affairs of Gentile or Israel. Just leave us to our own thing. Now, verse 4. This is God's response. He laughs a laugh of derision. Verse 5. Now, after they've rejected the king, they've crucified him. Rome carried it out. Israel demanded it. And it was accomplished. But he arose from the dead and went back to glory. Now, verse 5. Then, after his rejection, then he shall speak unto them, that is, the whole world, in his wrath, not love, not mercy. This is judgment. This is the tribulation. And he speaks them in his wrath. He will vex them. Now, remember the pronouns. Who are we talking about? The whole world. Not just Israel. Not Israel exempted. It's Jew and Gentile are going to come under the horrors of this final 7 years of tribulation, which here is called the wrath and vexation. All right, now then, what follows the wrath and vexation? The blessings. And what's the blessing? Yet have I set my king upon the holy hill of Zion. Now, isn't that as plain as you can get it? There's the process. Humankind reject the Messiah of Israel. They put him to death. We know from Psalms 110, verse 1, God calls him back to glory to sit at the Father's right hand until he makes his enemies his footstool, which will happen during the tribulation. Then comes in the wrath and the vexation, the 7 years that Daniel 9 depicts. But when the 7 years have run their course, Christ returns, ushers in this glorious kingdom on earth, and he will rule and reign from Mount Zion in Jerusalem. That's the kingdom. And it's now promised from Psalms all the way up through until John the Baptist comes, and what does he announce? The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Why? Because the king was in their midst.
Thank you for watching Through the Bible with Les Feldick. Through the Bible is a partner-supported ministry. If this program has been a help to your study of the Scriptures and you'd like to see others enjoy the teaching, your support would be greatly appreciated. Write to us at Les Feldick Ministries, 30706 West Lona Valley Road, Kenta, Oklahoma, 74552. Or call 1-800-369-7856. Remember, all programs are available in printed form, audio cassette, and videotape. Be sure to tune in next time to Through the Bible with Les Feldick.